When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Women, it is 2025, which means it is time for you to take your place in the sovereign birth movement. I am thrilled to announce that our absolutely groundbreaking, life-changing, consciousness-shifting, super popular program, the Radical Birthkeeper School, is now open for enrollment. This is your chance. We run the Radical Birthkeeper School once a year, so now's the time to jump in. You love this podcast. You're obsessed with birth. You want a better world for women and families. So here it is. I am inviting you to join the 850 women from over 30 countries who have taken this program and now are confidently bringing this work forward, protecting the sacredness of birth, being an option so desperately needed for mothers and babies. From women brand new to birth, to curious mothers pregnant with their first child, to disillusioned midwives and doulas, even OBGYNs and nurses, women are flocking to this new paradigm of birth consciousness, and the Radical Birthkeeper School is the gateway. The RBK School is the place to gain the language and the knowledge to communicate and step into the sovereign birth paradigm with confidence. If you feel the call, answer it by taking your place in the RBK School. Head over to www.radicalbirthkeeperschool.com today to preview the full curriculum, hear from our many graduates, and learn more. Mentorship, sisterhood, lifetime access, the knowledge, wisdom, and guidance you need to take your place in the sovereign birth revolution, all totally unlocked. Be the change. Join us. radicalbirthkeeperschool.com. Every now and then, a product comes along that our entire family can't get enough of. And lately, it's masa chips. Delicious chips made the way food was meant to be. Just three simple ingredients. Organic corn, salt, and beef tallow. No seed oils, no fillers, no ultra-processed garbage. Just real, whole food that nourishes rather than depletes. What we put into our bodies matters. It affects our energy, our mood, our resilience. And yet, the food industry today is completely disconnected from what's real and nourishing. Just like birth, food is one of the most powerful ways to claim sovereignty over our bodies. And it's no surprise that a sovereign birthing family is who makes these chips. When you snack, snack on something real. Go to masachips.com/discount/freebirthsociety and use code FREEBIRTHSOCIETY for 20% off your first order. All right, welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, this is really exciting. You know, for any of you listening who have been a part of the free birth world, you know, for any amount of time, you will have heard of Sarah. She is a freaking legend in the unassisted childbirth community. She has so generously shared her work, her stories, her birth videos to the world. And so I'm really excited to have you on today. Okay, so I'm just going to throw it to you for you to start wherever you want. Like, how do you even come into making these choices? How long ago was it? How many babies have you free birthed? Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, you could start really early. I mean, I could start with my mother. She had 5 children and I was the first, and she told our birth stories and everything was always fine, but in the hospital, things went, unnecessarily complicated. But not the birth itself, but what the stuff made out of it. So at my birth, my mother told me the story that everything went fine, but then when I was just about to come out, the heart rate dropped, and they sent my father out of the room, and then I was there. And thinking about my birth story, I was like, huh, why? Everything was fine. And when my mother had a few books about birth, and when I was a kid, I read them. I hid under the table and I read these adult books. Yeah. And she had this modern books about, I don't know what it's called in English, but how to deal with labor pains, with breathing methods and stuff like this. And there was also, there were pictures of a real birth. And the birth there seemed to take place in an operation room. And it seemed really sterile. And I was like, why are they doing this? So I understood the normal birth process, but I didn't understand why does the woman need to go to the operation room, and why? So it seemed strange to me from the beginning. So my thoughts as a kid were, I don't mind giving birth, but all the rest, maybe this is not necessary, or I will figure something else out, because it seemed strange, out of place for this event. So later, after school, I studied medicine, and when I was became pregnant with my first, I was working in the hospital, and I chose to do a part of my internship, or I don't know what it's called in English, the exact term, but I decided to do a part in the labor and delivery unit to see how birth is done in the hospital. It was the same where I was born, by the way. Mm. So, and the midwives, they were really old fashioned. So they were all still from GDR times and like military, and push, 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 and it came in and it will come out. And it looked like violence to me oftentimes. And I was standing there as a student beside, just watching, and like, I saw the midwife standing there with the scissors to cut the woman. And yeah. It didn't feel good. It looked like watching somebody do something violent to somebody. So I was confirmed in my imagination, I can give birth, no problem, but I don't want this stuff. I don't want this. So when I was pregnant with my first, which was the case, I looked for a home birth midwife. And I also found one. They said she's experienced. She was recommended to us. And so I went with her. I did my prenatals with her, and I thought I have figured out everything. She's an experienced midwife, and she will come to my birth, and the baby will be there. But then when the birth started, this midwife, my midwife, was at another birth. So her colleague came, and I had only seen her just walking by or something like that. I didn't know her really, and I didn't feel comfortable with her. So I was like, somehow I'll get through this. Like in German we say, close your eyes and get through it. But you can't do this with a birth, I figured out later. So I had labor stalled and I was in pain, and they didn't know what she ordered another midwife, because they would do birth with two midwives, and they thought birth was imminent because I was fully dilated, but obviously something didn't progress. And later they figured out that the baby's head had not turned fully into the pelvis yet. So I was fully dilated, but the baby would not turn in the pelvic inlet. So it was painful, and they didn't know what to do. And at that moment, I realized it's me that has to give birth here. At the beginning, it was a subconscious process that made me hand over the birth to them. I thought, now the professionals are here, they're gonna take care of it. And I just do nothing. And at that moment, I realized they don't know what to do. If I want to birth this baby and not end up in the hospital with a C-section, I have to birth this baby. I have to figure this out here. So I started to listen to my body and to move what my body was telling me. And then also the midwife that I had originally hired came from this other birth, came to my birth, and the baby was born at home. And I was completely exhausted, but the baby was there. And it took me weeks and months to process everything and to find out what happened and what went wrong and what can I do better for the next time. And I figured out that having midwives there was the first mistake I made. Not because of the midwives, but because of me, how I reacted to them. And that's why for the next birth,
a little bit because of the midwives too.
Yeah,
you know, they're giving you vaginal exams. You can't rely on who's going to show up.
But if I had not invited them, they wouldn't have been there, and everything else would have been different. So, but I think I had not calculated it to the end. I just knew hospital birth, how they work, and I thought home birth midwife, she would just be hands off and whatever. I don't know. I think I didn't think about it too much.
Well, I also don't think you could have possibly known.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, that's what we hope with women sharing their stories now. They can learn about the sensitivity of the birth process prior to going through it. But if your reference point was just avoid the hospital, you did just that.
Yeah. Yes, right. So we moved to Sweden in the time between the birth of my first and my second. And I had some time to process everything. And in Sweden, home births, midwives are really rare, and you have to pay them fully. And where we moved, the next home birth midwife was about an hour away. And so I was thinking, what do I do? Do I need a midwife? Do I want a midwife? Or do I better skip the midwife? Because will she make it to my birth if she is one hour away? Will we somehow match or not? Or will she cause more problems than solve? So in the end, I decided I don't want any of this. I'm just pregnant. And I give birth. And if something should be not as expected, I can still go to the hospital.
Right.
The hospital was about 20, 30 minutes away. So, but yeah.
So at this point in your life, had you ever heard of a woman birthing without a medical provider?
Yes. At that time, it was 2008. There was, the movement had already started in the United States. So there was almost nothing in German. But I read a lot of stories on the internet about the United States. And there were lots of birth stories I could read in, I think, mothering.com or whatever. They had lots of stories. And I especially picked those stories where they transferred to the hospital to find out why did they transfer? Why was it necessary? Or how could I, if this happened to me, how could I prevent the transfer? And most transfers, they were just because of the placenta would not come. And I was like, well, if it's just that, then why bother? So because I also wanted to figure out how dangerous is it? How often do things happen that really need immediate care and really the drama, you know? And I almost found no drama. So it was really, really rare to find any drama.
Right.
The most drama was the placenta that didn't come. So, and that's, that really made me confident in that, yeah, why not? You just give birth and that's it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So we lived in the countryside. So just a few houses along the roadside and forest behind. And one day I walked in the forest and I found my place to give birth. And there's nobody there in the forest, just birds and, you know. So compared to Germany, because where we lived before, we also lived beside the forest, but there were always people walking with their dogs and everything. But in Sweden, nobody there. And this was the perfect place for my birth, for my first free birth. So in the night of the free birth, I went
to my... season? What season of the year
it? Was in the summer, of course. Okay. Because in the winter, no.
Right, of course not. That would be crazy.
You can't even get through the snow. But it was in the middle of the summer. It wasn't. It doesn't even get really dark in the night there because it's so much north. And so it was perfect for birthing outside.
Wow.
And so I the birth started in the night with, and it started with rupture of membranes. And I told my husband, well, I don't know how long this is going to go. Just go to sleep and we'll see. And so, but I couldn't lay down and sleep because contractions already started. And so I walked around the house and my older daughter, my mother-in-law took care of her and they were sleeping in the same house. And I heard her getting awake because I was moving around the house.
Yeah.
So I decided to walk around the garden outside. And when I felt like going into this state of trance that you do at some point in the birth, I took my little package I had with some stuff I thought I would need for the birth. And then I went to this place in the forest. It was maybe 5 minutes away, so it was not far. And there I gave birth maybe an hour or 1.5 hours later.
And was your husband there?
He was not there. I let him sleep. Because I had my fears from the first birth. I was afraid that this could happen again. The baby wouldn't turn well into the pelvis and all of this. So my husband has had his own fears. And I thought I have to deal with my fears first now. I don't need his fears also.
So you just walk into the forest with a little basket of things and do your thing on your own. Yeah. At what time of day?
It was in the night. Like he was born 3:20 or something like that.
In the middle of the night.
Yes.
Wow. Was there moonlight? How bright was it?
It was not really dark because it was summer in Sweden. And then you still see light on the horizon and it's not really dark. You cannot really distinguish colors, but you see black and white. So you still see something. Yeah.
So what was that like to be totally alone? I mean, outside.
I beforehand I figured out that I can relax really well when I'm in the forest and I have this feeling nobody sees me. I'm just not observed at all. Mm-hmm. I can observe everything, but nobody sees me, and that makes me really relaxed. I figured this out already before in my first pregnancy because I was working in the hospital and it was really stressful and I couldn't go to the bathroom because it was so stressful. But when I walked in the forest just 15 minutes, I could go and I had to run home to make it. So I knew already I can relax really well in the forest, and that's why I use the forests. And forest doesn't scare me at all. I love it. I love it when it's just nobody there and just melting with the trees and nobody sees me. Mm-hmm. Really makes me relax, and that's why I chose the forest. So it was I loved it, and it was that's just such a surreal feeling to sit there in the middle of the night. And the first bird it started to get light again because the nights are really short in the summer in Sweden, and I heard the first bird make its noise, and I was thinking everybody else is in the hospital right now at this point. This is really weird.
So So you just like lay a blanket out? You have an area that's cleared that you lay a blanket and do you give birth on your hands and knees? And what's it like to catch this baby alone at 3 a.m. in the woods? And then when do you walk back home? And is your husband bummed he missed it?
Well, I had my picnic blanket that I rolled out. And yeah, then it was just on my hands and knees that I gave birth. And I had my mobile with me, so I called him when the baby was there.
Okay.
And I told him to bring me something to drink because that's what I had forgotten. And I usually get thirsty while birthing, but I didn't know that before. So he came with, and because I was getting cold. That's usually you do after the birth when the hormones drop, and then you start being cold. So he brought me my jacket and he brought me something to drink, and yeah, and picked us up. And the placenta fell out on the way back home. So we walked through the forest back.
Wow. So you started walking before the placenta had released.
Yeah.
And then it fell out on the walk.
The baby and the placenta were still in, and then the placenta just fell out just a few meters walking.
I mean, that's a surefire way to get it out, right? Just to walk.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about it at that point, but I think maybe a half an hour had went or something like that.
Wow. Yeah.
So we just went home and I took a shower and we went to bed and got warm. I got warm again. Yeah, that was my first unassisted birth. And with the next birth, my husband was always present. So I had solved my fears and I had solved his at the same time because he saw I could do this. So he was not afraid again.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a doctor. So, you know, it's a challenge for somebody like him to have a woman that wants to give birth just on her own. It took some time during the pregnancy to get comfortable with this for him. So I think he wasn't really comfortable with it till the end, but yeah, he let me do my thing, and I'm really grateful for that he didn't make the drama.
Well, you also snuck off to the forest. He didn't really have a big choice. I mean, I know of lots of women who, with nervous partners or partners who are totally against it, they just don't wake them up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a pretty good plan. That's awesome. So how do you feel about yourself after this? How does it change you? Because obviously you go on to have several more children. How many children do you have?
10. I have 10 children now.
And so this was in, your first child was 2008?
My first was 2006. This was the home birth. And then 2008 was the first free birth.
Gotcha.
Yeah, of course. Afterwards, you feel like cloud nine and you can do everything in the world. And yeah, it's a really great feeling.
And so I guess just keep going. Like, tell us about the next one and how.
Yeah, the next one was also an outdoor birth. He was born in the end of May, and it was we were still in Sweden. So three of my kids were born in Sweden. And then we moved to France. And number three was born in the house because it was April and still cold.
Mm-hmm.
But everything was always just birth, you know, nothing complicated that happened. And the next kids, number 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, they were born in France. Number 7 and 8 are twins. So I had to prepare for twins a little extra because
Did you know that there were twins?
I figured out during the pregnancy, so like 24 weeks, 25 weeks, I palpated 2 and 2, so like 4 bumps. And I was thinking, what else could it be than twins?
Right.
So I went in for 1 ultrasound to have it confirmed because my husband wanted this for the car because we only had 1 spare place in the car and now we had maybe 2. And that would have to change his plans with a car, how we transport everybody. So I had 1 ultrasound. So this was confirmed that they were twins and they were head down both at that point, and they were boy and girl. So the really low complicated twin pregnancy you can have. If they're two, how do you say that? when they are two egg. No, I don't know how they call this in English. Yeah, so they are not have not the same genes, and if they have their separate placenta and their separate sac, and when they are head down, it's also perfect. So I was not afraid that it would not work. Why shouldn't they be just born like everybody else?
Okay, and so it didn't rock you all that much.
Not the thought of the birth, but the thought of having to care of two babies, because I think one is already quite a lot of work, but two is
and going from three to five.
No, it was even seven and eight, so it was going from six to.
Oh, you already had six.
It was later. I just jumped over a few.
Oh, okay. So the third was in Sweden, and that was in April when it was kind of cold.
No, this was number four. And the third was in May in Sweden, also outdoor. He came so fast. I wanted this time. I thought I put up my teepee. I have an Native American tent, and I thought I could give birth in there in case it rains. But this birth was so fast that I just managed to run outside when I noticed, okay, now the baby's coming. And half the way to the teepee, he was born already.
Oh my gosh.
So he was really fast. And so there was not much to talk about. He was the only baby that came on his due date, and everybody else came after the due date.
Yeah.
So I was not expecting it, you know, because I'm always expecting my babies after the due date, because that's usually when they come. And he came precisely on the due date. So,
wow.
Yeah. And he was really fast.
And then four and five and
number
six.
Four. Yeah. Number four was born in Sweden in the living room because it was cold outside in April. And number five was born in France, where we moved to an apartment. He was also born inside because it was February. And number six was born outdoor because it was the best weather you can think of in the beginning of September. And I dropped him. He was so tiny. He was a little lighter than the other babies. And he shot out so fast that I somehow didn't manage to catch him. And the cord tore.
It happens.
Yeah, but he was fine. So nothing
and
spectacular.
And so what was your living situation with the sixth child where you were able to be outside?
Yeah, we had moved to a house. So from with baby number five, we were living in an apartment. There was a garden also, but it was shared with another apartment.
That'd be a little intense.
Yeah. So, but for number five, we had moved to a house and a garden for our own. And he was born there. We are still living in this place. This was number six. And number seven and eight were the twins. They were also born in April and it was cold outside, so no way to birth outside.
Well, tell us about the twins' birth, because that's, you know, I mean, on the one hand, it's like you just give birth twice, right? And on the other hand, it's a really big deal because most twins are not born this way.
Yeah, that's true. But I would say it was one of my easiest births, because I don't know why, but maybe because their heads were a little bit smaller. They was 1 centimeter smaller than the other heads. So I didn't even have this phase where you think you can't do it anymore. It was just like, okay, and now we push them out. So it was not this desperation phase that I usually get at that at one point, but it was really, really easy. I had a friend that was taking photos and someone that was filming, and I was talking to them and how I would usually do it. And then I stand there with between my chairs, and then I push them out. And that's, I told them. And then the pushing contraction started, and I pushed the first one out. So It was really simple. And then when the first one was out, the cord was super short. So I could barely hold, I could only hold him between my legs, and that's how much cord was visible. And so I didn't really know what to do, but we decided, we have to cut the cord now. And it looked white, so I thought maybe it had stopped pulsing. But I think also the traction made it look. So when we cut it, we didn't think of tying it first, so there was some blood.
Then
we tied it afterwards. Anyway, I don't think it mattered. So we had him, and then I was feeling the contractions coming back, and I felt if the head of the other one was down, if I could feel it. And I did. And so I thought, okay, that's the way we go. And then 9 minutes later, number two was there. So it was not really spectacular, just two coming out.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was it like mothering two babies? Did you breastfeed them? How was your recovery?
I recovered well, like with the others. I didn't bleed much. So there are people who say, oh, many kids and twins and you bleed. I didn't bleed with any of my babies. So, and I recovered well, like with the others. Who was there? I think my mother. My mother. She takes, I always get somebody who cooks for me like 10 or to 14 days, first awesome. 10, 14 days, because I don't like food that's just warm from the freezer. I don't like that. And I have so many kids. I don't know how to get so much food in the freezer either. So somebody Seriously. Has to cook for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
To cook for me. And that's basically what I need. But having two at the same time is just less sleep. And you just do everything double. You get routines and doing things. And it's good if it's not baby one and two with twins, but I already had some routine and doing things, so it was not that hard. And mm-hmm. they were quite calm, so not mm-hmm. fuzzy, and so it was okay. But it's not as relaxed as just
it's still
having
two one. Babies.
It's still yeah. two babies, I breastfed them both from the beginning to the end, and I never gave a bottle to anybody. So, but my body is doing this really well.
Good. Anything to say about the breastfeeding of twins? Because that's also something that's quite rare nowadays, sadly.
In the beginning, I stacked them. I fed them on laying on my side, and I stacked them on one on the other.
And the babies or the boobs?
I stacked the babies. I swaddled them and then I stacked them.
That's funny.
Yeah, I tried everything that I could think of what would make it easier for me.
Sure.
Then I had these cradle boards. I have this Native American cradle board that I once ordered from the United States. And I let someone make another one. So I had two. And for a long time, when I wanted to put them to sleep both at the same time, I put them both on their cradle board and sitting and put them on my breasts, and they would fall asleep feeding at the same time. And I could take the cradle boards, just put it away without right. them waking up. So this was a really game changer. I love the cradle board for this. Yeah.
You must have felt like the most victorious person in the world to successfully get two babies
yes.
nursed in the sleep. That's like true magic. Wow. Mm-hmm. And this whole time you said your husband is a doctor. Is he like gone a lot, or is he around with all these kiddos?
Yeah, he comes home in the evening, and on the weekends he's home. Yeah.
So he works like a normal
yeah
doctor job. Yeah. Whew, okay. So now we're at, wait, that was 7 and 8?
Yes.
Okay. So now 8 children. What year are we now? How long ago was this?
2019.
Oh, a minute. Okay. So with your children, were you just, you know, on the one hand, I was going to say, you don't see as many large families these days, but that's not necessarily true. It depends where you go. Like, plenty of communities have large families. But I guess what I was going to ask was, with regards to having a lot of children, have you and your husband always dreamt of that? Or did you just feel open to what God gives you? Like, what was the, you know?
So when we married, we said we agreed to, we would probably have four. First we have two, and when they are nice kids, then we have another two.
It's a great plan.
So it came out that the first two were not so nice. They have autism and ADHD.
Oh no!
Yeah, but I felt the challenge. Like, how can it I not have healthy children? So I felt challenged in this because I thought I would do everything. I was doing everything right, nutrition and not giving medication.
Right.
But I didn't take into account myself and the health that I had prior to becoming pregnant. I was addicted to sugar. I had had multiple rounds of antibiotics before getting pregnant. And yeah, I felt I have to change something. And it really, it was a journey I went on to become more healthy and to have more healthier children.
Right. So it really, so your oldest two children have autism.
Yeah, the one has autism and one is ADHD.
Okay. And then the rest of the children do not?
Some have tendencies to ADHD, but not really. So I would say they are at the border, but only maybe one, number four. Number three is normal and the others are also normal, what I can see. So, and I could really see how they would become more healthy as I became healthier.
Totally. Also and, in reverse, you know, imagine if you had had industrial pregnancies and given your firstborn, given, you know, her all the shots and all the stuff. I mean, I see these children in the free birth world who are, you know, have what's the right word, have divergencies or whatever, have autism. And I just imagine like, oh my God, what if they had been given all the ultrasounds, all the vaccines, and how much worse they would be.
Oh yeah. That's what I've been asking myself too. I mean, it's not nice. It's really not nice to have a child grow up like this and having to deal with it. She's 18 now, oldest, and it's still, I mean, she doesn't work. She doesn't want to work. And she's just, she claims she's sick. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to convince her otherwise or that she can influence her situation. So it's just like I'm the victim.
What are her limitations?
She is exhausted really fast. She has iron deficiency and she's taking supplements, but it doesn't really push her up. I don't know. I also cannot say how much is just she's making up in her mind.
Totally.
How much is really a physical thing, because if you feel something in your body, you can really feel into it, and then you feel, I mean, I think about it, I can feel everything. I can get a headache and I can feel,
totally.
I mean, you know, and so I cannot really say what's real and what's just, she's making up. So this is really,
Totally. And a lifelong story, right? There was a lifelong story of her being autistic or different totally. That's really interesting. So you were inspired to get even healthier and see how that was going to affect your future babies.
Yeah, because it challenged my, I don't know, my pride a little, because I'm a doctor. I studied medicine and I don't know how to have healthy children. And I didn't even learn anything about it. I just learned how to recognize and to manage sickness. But what's this about? It's not about sickness. It's about, we want to be healthy, of course. And I didn't learn anything about this. So I had to learn this after my studies.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's what I did.
So what kind of doctor are you?
I don't have a specialty. I just did the basic thing. And then I worked a little in the hospital, but I don't have this specialty. Okay. In Germany, it's divided in two. So I have this basic studies and then you continue in some direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we got through the twins. So now we have two more children.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about number nine.
Number nine, I was thinking, oh no, it's twins again. I was palpating
No!
Because my belly was so huge and I couldn't figure out what it was. And it felt like, I thought, is it the placenta, an anterior placenta? But in other pregnancies, I also had a placenta that was a little interior and I could hear it with the stethoscope, but I couldn't hear this one. So I was like, what is this? But it was an anterior placenta. So I got another ultrasound, one ultrasound in this pregnancy, to just figure out what's going on here. Is it two or is it just a placenta and a baby? And I was so happy that it was just a placenta and a baby.
Oh my goodness. I know three different women who have had twins twice and one three times.
Yeah, oh. That was my feeling. I totally like to have one baby, but two is, it was a good experience, but if I can choose, then I would choose rather one at a time.
Of course. Yeah. It's nothing like against the babies. It's just you only have so many hands and breasts and yeah, of course. Okay, so you confirm that it is just one single baby. You're still in this home in France, right?
Yes. And my husband is working in a what's it called? He's a doctor, so he was working. He has this what do you call this place where the doctors work? So there's an ultrasound machine as well. So we checked it on our own. We checked if there is one or two babies and where's the placenta. And the placenta was really low. It was at that point, like 27 weeks or so, it was before the cervix. So I was like, okay, let's see what's happening. Mm-hmm. I was not bleeding or anything. And the baby came 14 days after the due date. And it didn't move into the pelvis until the day of the birth. Moved in the pelvis and contraction started.
Oh my God.
I think the placenta was so low and had just barely moved away, and that's why the baby decided to wait as long as possible. And then
totally.
Yeah.
So smart. And so how worried were you about the placenta?
A little, but I also knew that most of the time it just moves out of the way. So that it was not completely on the cervix, but more in the front, so mm-hmm. the chances of moving away were just good, I was thinking, and as long as I don't bleed much, I think everything is fine.
So you were just gonna wait and see if you bled.
Yes,
and then exactly. You didn't.
Yeah, and I didn't.
Okay.
So but it was 14 days after the due date, and she was my heaviest baby. She was four kilograms, and her shoulder had trouble to move at the birth. So when the head was out, I recognized that it was really hard to get the head out at the first place. So a typical sign for a shoulder dystocia, and then the shoulder wouldn't move, and I pushed like whoop, and then I remembered, okay, the Gaskin maneuver: you move on your knees on all fours, and then the shoulder should become free, and that's what happened. So I knew what to do in this case, and so that's why it was it was hard to push her out, but no drama afterwards, because I could solve the problem fast.
So do you think it was shoulder dystocia?
It was some kind of it, because usually when you push, with one push there comes the head and with the next comes the baby, and here in this case it didn't happen, so the shoulders took more time to turn. But I also know this this debate in English, in the English speaking birthing community, where they distinguish between a sticky shoulder and a shoulder dystocia, and I don't really know where they put the line.
Yeah, I mean, so shoulder dystocia is stuck. You know, sticky shoulders, that's like when midwives say a cervical lip. It's nothing. It's not. Sticky shoulders means it's still coming, right? Which is not shoulder dystocia. Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. like a cervical lip just means there's still cervix. It's they're just like silly medical terms, you know. But shoulder dystocia means stuck.
Well, I got it unstuck, so
yeah,
I don't know.
Thank God.
I knew what to do.
And so the Gaskin maneuver, meaning you just flipped onto your hands and knees. And in doing that, and so you didn't need anyone from the outside to help get the shoulder unhooked.
Yeah. I just I was standing, and so I just went from standing to on all fours, mm-hmm. and that's where the shoulder released and the baby came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so then number 10, are you at any point, and sorry if this is like an annoying question, but are you at any point feeling like this is a lot of babies. Like, I might not want to keep having more children, or you just like bring it on.
It's usually like this. When I have a baby, I'm like full. I'm busy. I don't have space for another one, and I don't think about another one. Mm-hmm. But then the youngest gets older, and there's more space to do same things. And then my cycle comes back, and my ovaries, they start asking. Mm-hmm. And somehow then my body wants another baby. And
fair enough.
It tells me to have another baby. And then the thought is circling around my head all the time, especially around ovulation, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's how it has been with all the babies. I don't know how it will be in the future. I have no idea, because I'm 43 now, and at some point, you stop. Stop
having. Totally, at some point, yeah. But and it could always still be in a while. I mean, I just heard about a 50-year-old woman free birthing.
But when I was younger, people always said, oh, when you get 40, it's hard to get pregnant. And so I was thinking, okay, until 40, and then it's done anyway. And now I'm over 40, and I notice it's not so easily done.
Yeah, totally.
So right now I think it's final 10. But it could happen in like 2 years that my ovaries again.
And how old is your youngest?
He is 6 months.
Oh, okay. So he's a little guy.
Yes.
Okay, so you only birthed 6 months ago. What was that birth like?
Yeah, this was my last one. And now we have bought a farm where we want to move soon. And on the farm, there are so many nice spots where you could give birth. And his birth was in June. So I decided to give birth. We have sheep that are already on the farm. And I decided to give birth where the sheep are, because I thought this is just a relaxing place here. And one of our sheep gave birth there in April, at the same spot where I gave birth later to baby number 10. So I thought I could do something else than just here in the garden or in the living room.
So were you alone, or was your family there?
No, I was not alone. We had friends living on the farm in their caravan at the time. And I had a photographer coming, and I had friends coming. And so it was a family event. But when I was giving birth, I wanted everybody to stay away and quiet, just so they were just standing and watching and letting me do my thing, and that's fine. And afterwards, it was not everybody. So it was nice.
That's awesome. So do you work in the birth realms? Like, you've written a book, right? Tell us about your work in birth. Do you work with women?
So I wrote the book Free Birth after baby number 4. I wrote the book, and at first I didn't want to, because I thought I don't have time. But my publisher asked me, you would be the best person to write this book. And I was like, oh, I don't have time. But I really like writing, so I did night shifts writing this book.
Wow.
And I have been working with women, like being at birth also, like for 4 years now. So I am at free birth. So I'm not a midwife, and I'm not doing the midwifery stuff, but like a doula, or like, yeah, I'm just there helping with my experience and helping what is needed at the place. So,
but that is true midwifery.
Yeah, but you are not allowed to say it, because the state has conquered the term midwife, and that's why I just don't give it a name. I don't give it a tag. I don't give myself a tag, and this way I can do what I like to do.
Totally, like wink, wink. Oh gosh. Okay, so that's cool. So you started attending, and you've written this book, and you've had 10 children. Anything else you want to share about your life or your work?
Yeah, we started a free birth academy in German. So we train women to learn about birth, about for preparing their own birth, or also attending others. Yeah, I want the knowledge about birth to get out to the women as much as possible and not be confined to a special special group of people who feel very about it. So, and I have groups on Telegram where about birth and pregnancy and having a baby and teeth and all the stuff that I have learned in the over the years, and I like to share and to that people come together and learn new ways and more than just what the doctor says.
Yeah, we need it. We really need it. Well, how can women find out more about you and find out about your Free Birth Academy?
You could go to my website, but it's in German too, but there's an English sub page. It's called geburtineigenregie.de. I don't know. Maybe you can link it if you like to. Mm-hmm. They can also go to my YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is just my name, so it's easily to find. And there are my birth videos. One was taken down by YouTube, and I haven't fixed what they were. Yeah, you know. So, but the others are there. And I on my YouTube channel, I think also my website is linked, and with my contacts are on my website. And I think my Instagram is also linked on my YouTube. So I think on YouTube, you find all the other.
You find everything. Okay, wonderful. Well, I can't believe we got through 10 birth stories in an hour. Pretty simple and sweet. Well, thank you so much. It was really nice to connect.
Yeah, I like to connect to the English-speaking community. It's naturally that I'm more in the German-speaking realm. But yeah, it's always nice to also hear what everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive private vetted membership, the Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back.